intestines. Now, the large intestine has a few critical parts, and the large intestine is only about 5 to 6 feet. Compare that to the small intestine, that's about 21 feet or so. The large intestine has a cecum. This is where it starts. This is where the ileocecal valve is, and that's where the small intestine, the ileum of the small intestine, connects to the cecum of the large intestine, right? And the thing in between them is the ileocecal valve. So that's a very important component because, again, SIBO and other problems may occur as a result of a dysfunction in the ileocecal valve. Now, how do you know if your ileocecal valve is having a problem? You will find pain and sensitivity in the right lower quadrant of your abdomen, right? So if you're trying to feel around for, like, your gut hurts when you eat or after digestion, and you're trying to feel around like where it hurts, if you poke around in the right lower quadrant and you feel specific areas of tenderness there, it could be an issue in your cecum, and your ileocecal valve are inflamed, and it may be causing regurgitation and other inflammatory processes in that area. Then the colon has the ascending, transverse, and descending part of the colons, and then the final part of it's called the sigmoid that connects into the rectum. And then, of course, the rectum and the anus are the section where waste is stored and then finally eliminated, right? Now, what's distinct about the large bowel is that's where most of the water is being absorbed. It's 90 to 95% of the water and electrolytes are getting absorbed there. And then, of course, all of the undigestible food, or the food that just didn't get digested, end up in the small and the large bowel, where it ends up getting fermented. Now, the fermentation is why the transit time in the large bowel can be so slow, right? Anyone who's fermented anything on your own, you know, fermentation takes a while. It could take 10, 12, 14, 24 hours, right? And so we know that because fermentation is a primary action in the large bowel, it can take a very long time for things to transit through. That's why when you look at the transit time, when we're talking about it, you can have upwards of 24, 30 hours just in the large bowel itself, right? And as water is absorbed while the food bolus is going through the large bowel, it hardens and compacts the stool. Right, this is one of the reasons why water absorption occurs in the large bowel, because that's where you want the stool to be well hydrated moving through the small bowel and so on. And then once it gets to the large bowel, you want it to start getting dehydrated, so it's a little bit more solid and it can be compacted into a tube-like shape, right? The large bowel is where microfermentation happens with undigested food. And of course, the large bowel is an oxygen-free environment largely. That is done so by the microbiome and also the production of short-chain fatty acids that allow the intestinal epithelial cells to take up oxygen and utilize it. And then they start using short-chain fatty acids like butyrate for fuel instead of other sources of fuel. The pH of the large intestine is slightly more acidic, and it's a low oxygen environment than the other parts of the bowel. The large bowel is the main home of your gut microbiome, right? The large bowel has trillions of microbes in it, and it's the most densely populated microbiome in the body. It's 10 to the 12 CFUs per ml. Remember, the highest amount in the small bowel was 10 to the 6. The difference between 10 to the 6 and 10 to the 12 is a millionfold difference, right? There's a million times more microbes in the large bowel than there are in the small bowel, right? Just think about how purposeful that design is, right? Just millimeters apart. The end of the small bowel to the beginning of the large bowel, you can have a millionfold increase in the microbes that live there. The microbes, of course, break down fibers, resistant starches, and other remaining carbohydrates. They produce short-chain fatty acids, including butyrate and lots of other compounds as a result of it. Microbes in the colon also help metabolize bile acids, converting them to secondary bile salts that I've mentioned that controls certain microbes. It enhances peristaltic activity, and it can improve tight junction function, but it also feeds beneficial bacteria, which is really good. And then in the large bowel itself, during that course of fermentation, there are over 10,000 other compounds produced when you include things like proteins and enzymes and all that. Some of these compounds are vitamins, so all kinds of vitamins like vitamin K, vitamin K2 are produced in the large bowel, urolithins, conjugated linoleic acids that are really important for metabolic health, brain health, and so on. Tryptamine, which is a derivative of tryptophan, which also has an immune modulatory effect. Secondary bile salts, GABA, dopamine, all of these compounds are being produced in the large bowel by the microbiome. This is why you want to have a very diverse and well-functioning microbiome in the large bowel, because there are thousands of critical components and compounds that we need to function that are produced only in the large bowel by microbes. The large bowel also works hard with the microbiome to balance out immune function, because the microbiome and the immune relationship in the large bowel, basically balances out the immune response and builds tolerance for the immune system. This communication with all of the compounds coming into the large bowel from the small bowel and in the small bowel itself, where the immune system is encountering all of these food particles, the microbiome is teaching the immune system what to attack and what not to attack. This is where a lot of the tolerance work comes in. It starts in the mouth with the secretory IgA, like I mentioned, but as these antigens move into the intestines, the small and large bowel interaction with the microbes are teaching the immune system what to attack and what not to attack. It also, the microbes in the large bowel upregulate Treg cells and pattern recognition receptors. These are the cells that recognize food particles and food antigens and suppresses immune responses against them. These cells require the microbiome to upregulate, right? So IgA secretion is also created and stimulated in the large bowel by the microbiome. This continuous development of the gut-associated lymphoid tissue that's happening from large bowel interacting, the cells of the large bowel, the immune cells of the large bowel interacting with the microbiome. And then finally, communication with the systemic immune response also translates from the large bowel throughout the rest of the body. So all of those tolerance signals, what to attack, what not to attack, that type of intelligence, all of that translates from the large bowel, the interaction of the immune cells in the large bowel to the rest of the system, providing us overall tolerance and overall a balanced immune response. So if you have large bowel dysfunctions, here are some of the signs and symptoms you could start to look at, right? And then, you could kind of discern what part of your large bowel may be problematic when you look at where it might hurt. So, right lower quadrant is that sigmoid area. The transverse colon is upper, the part right below the stomach, where you feel where your stomach is distended. Right below that is a transverse colon going across. And then the descending colon is on your left side. So if things hurt on your left side, it's likely in the descending colon. And then down by your belly button and deeper in, if the pain's there, then it's likely around the sigmoid end or the rectum area where you're holding stool itself, right? So you can kind of guess like, okay, where are my dysfunctions? Where am I feeling pain or discomfort after I eat and after digestive process? Incidentally, it's quick to, I want to remind everyone of a thing about the gastric transit time. This is where I've talked about this a bunch of times where people say, oh my God, I have SIBO. And I go, well, how do you know you have SIBO? They go, well, as soon as I eat something, I bloat, right? Or soon, a few minutes after I start eating, I bloat. Well, remember gastric transit time. Once you eat and swallow something, it sits in the stomach for up to 2 to 4 hours, right? And in a normal functioning digestive tract, it's around 2, maybe 2.5 hours. So it doesn't get into the small intestine. And in the small intestine, it can sit there for 5 or 6 hours, making its way from the beginning of the small intestine to the large, to the end of the small intestine, where it can get fermented. So if you have SIBO, if you have small intestinal bacterial overgrowth that's causing a fermentation and a bloating and gas production, that can't happen for at least an hour or two after eating, even if you have very fast transit time through the stomach. So if you're getting bloating at the moment of starting to eat or within a few minutes of starting to eat, it's not necessarily SIBO, it's other immunological issues and reasons, right? And if that's you, save that question for the Q&A session, because we can really tackle that mechanism during the Q&A session. So the Bristol stool chart can be quite useful. It goes from type 1 to type 7, as you see here. The ideal stool is type 4. Right? So type one is indicating constipation. If you tend to be constipated, you're going to look like type one or type two. And then type six and seven are indicating loose stool or diarrhea. If you're constipated, you want to bring it towards four. If you're at six or seven, you want to bring it towards four. You can use some of the tactics we talked about earlier. For example, if you look at your stool and you're consistently looking like type one or type two, it means you're constipated and your bowels are moving too slowly. You can increase the transit time of the bowel by adding that insoluble fiber. Right? And then exercising after a meal, and maybe even adding coffee and other stimulants, relaxing a little bit more because maybe your peristaltic activity is compromised by stress response. You want to allow the migrating motor complex to kick in before your next meal. So wait 5 to 6 hours before your next meal to allow some of that cleaning process. And incidentally, the way you know your migrating motor complex is starting is you feel that gurgling in the stomach, right? So the gurgling in the stomach is the start of the migrating motor complex, or sorry, the phase three of the migrating motor complex. That's really the phase that's cleaning out the system. And the gurgling and the sounds that you hear is the movement of air through the digestive tract from the stomach into the small intestine and through the small intestine, right? So you want that to occur. Let that occur. Give that another 40 minutes or so, and then you eat, right? So that's one way of kind of timing that. You eat, and then you don't eat again until you feel those hunger pangs, and then you hear that gurgling system. Now, the gurgling system actually cures the hunger pangs, right? Most of you have probably noticed this when you feel really hungry, and then if your tummy gets to a point where it's gurgling and doing that sound, then the hunger goes away. And that's because the migrating motor complex actually shuts down the hunger signal, because it doesn't want you to eat while the MMC is happening, right? So my recommendation is wait till you feel that gurgling, let that go through for about 30, 40 minutes, and then eat. And then that should be a normal practice. But certainly if you have a type one or type two stool on this chart, you definitely want to do that. If you have type six or seven, your transit time may be too fast. Your large bowel may be too inflamed to absorb the liquid that it should be absorbing, so it's not forming the stools properly. So what you want to do is then increase your soluble fiber to slow down your gastric time, right? You might want to increase some fat intake to slow down your gastric time. You may increase protein intake to also slow down your gastric time, right? So, and you might be too stressed to when you're eating, because stress increases gastric time and causes loose stool as well. So that's the way you would really kind of look and use the Bristol stool chart.